Days at noon, as we explore the universal energy that connects us all, let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Hello and welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might be listening in Nova Scotia at Axe Radio or online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network, and wherever you're listening from. Welcome to the show and thanks for joining us today. And we have a little bit of a change today. I'm joined by Philip, who is checking out CITR and thinking about maybe joining and becoming a member, because anyone in the community can become a member of the station and learn to use all the equipment and maybe get a show. So he's checking things out. He may or may not ask a question. He's just listening quietly right now. So thank you for joining me. And today's guest is Eldon Taylor. Eldon is an award-winning New York Times bestselling author of more than 300 books and audio and video programs, and is the host of the popular radio show Provocative Enlightenment. His most recent works include I Believe, Mind Programming, What Does That Mean, What If, and Self-Hypnosis and Subliminal Technology. Eldon is also the inventor of the patented Inner Talk Technology and the founder and president of Progressive Awareness Research. He's been featured as an expert in films, print, television, and radio, and he's also been called a master of the mind and has appeared as an expert witness on both hypnosis and subliminal communication. And he is here to speak with us today about his brand new book, Choices and Illusions. Welcome to the show, Eldon.
Thank you indeed. It's my pleasure to join you. I love what you do.
Thank you. So you served as an expert witness in the Judas Priest subliminal messaging case. Now, I imagine a lot of our listeners are younger and might not even know who Judas Priest is, but I think that was around the 80s, correct?
It was 28 years ago that there was actually the double shooting, 28 years ago right now. So, Judas Priest, however, is a rather famous, recording group, and so you'd have to be pretty young not to have heard of Judas Priest, I think, but, yeah.
All right, thank you. And so can you just tell us a little bit about what that was like and how, you served as an expert witness, so what were you testifying about specifically?
Well, the whole scenario begins this way. We have two young men, teenagers, going through, what teenagers go through, with all the neurochemicals and so forth changing in their body. And one of these young men has been a fan of Judas Priest, but then has become religious and thrown out all of his Judas Priest albums and gotten rid of all of his music. Because he's found this gal that is Christian, and they've become a number, and now they've broken up. And so it's December 23rd, and his friend has just presented him with a Christmas present, and it is the Judas Priest album, Stained Class. Now, there's a song on this Stained Class album called Better By You, Better Than Me. And this song has lyrics that overtly encourage suicide. The two boys drink a little beer, share a six-pack, hit on a joint, have a little marijuana, and they play during this period of time over and over and over again the song Better By You, Better Than Me. Now, they look at one another, and they say to each other, do it, do it, do it. They grab dad's shotgun. They go to the schoolyard next door. Belknap braces the shotgun, puts it under his chin, pulls the trigger, blows his head off, kills himself. Vance doesn't want to do it. We learn all of this because Vance later, because he failed to brace the shotgun, he blew off the front of his face and ended up going through a number of surgeries and taking 3 years to die, but during that process, he happened to meet with his former school counselor, and she was deposed by CBS Records, CBS releasing the Stained Glass album. In her testimony, in her deposition, she told how Vance had told her that he was afraid, he didn't want to shoot himself, but he started chanting again, and he said to do it, do it, do it. And so he pulled the trigger, he could hear the sirens coming, and that's the last he remembers. Now, allegedly, there were a number of subliminal messages in this album, and there were. I should take the word allegedly and subtract that, because they were demonstrated to the court. However, my involvement came when I was asked to determine whether or not those subliminal messages could have been a causal factor in the double shooting. And when I looked at this case, we discovered, independent of what CBS's discovery was, a command, a subliminal command within those lyrics that encouraged suicide. And that subliminal command was a repeated, do it, do it. Okay, so I did testify that in my view it was a causal factor. We demonstrated to the court that the do it command did indeed exist. Again, we didn't. We found the do it subliminal message independent of the discovery CBS had, where we then learned that Vance and Belknap had chanted do it before they grabbed the gun and went to the schoolyard. So, to me, you know, that would drive coincidence beyond the probability of what that word is intended to mean. Obviously, there was a causal connection. Also testifying in the trial on behalf of the Vance and Belknap people was Dr. Howard Chevron. Now, Chevron had testified before Congress in 1984 when they had a hearing regarding subliminal. And when we were hearing that subliminal information could, for all intent and purposes, be potentially the most dangerous technology ever developed, Chevron testified against Lloyd Silverman. Silverman, from New York State University, was of the opinion that without a doubt, based on his research, subliminal information could influence behavior. Chevron, on the other hand, testified that there was no doubt that it was processed. His work with the P300 cortical evoked potential, he was able to actually watch the brain process subliminal information, but he didn't believe that it could influence behavior. Now, this same Dr. Howard Chevron testified in the Judas Priest case, and again on behalf of Belknap and Vance, and took the same position I did, and that was, without a doubt, it was a causal factor, because by the time we approached this case, the evidence was rather robust that subliminal information was not only processed, but that it was acted upon, that it influenced behavior. Now, since you asked the question, what happened in the case? Well, CBS was fined multiple times by Judge Whitehead for things such as impeding the discovery process or for manipulating the media, leaking stories that distorted the truth, spun it, if you will, and sometimes were just factually incorrect, all with the idea of propaganda convincing the public at large that there was nothing to this case, that these were two mentally disturbed young men from screwed up families with idiots there testifying on their behalf, etc., and so forth. Okay. There was a study that was conducted at that point in time, well, actually it had been conducted prior, that was a study designed to measure the influence of labels on the expectation factor, period, end of quotation. The nature of this study, and it was conducted at Washington State University, the nature of the study was they obtained five different commercial companies subliminal programs, memory and esteem. They switched the labels. So the memory program was labeled esteem, the esteem was labeled memory. They then gave these programs to individuals after telling them that this was a subliminal memory program designed to improve your memory. However, it wasn't what they really received. What they received was an esteem program, and vice versa. With the esteem, they were told they were receiving a memory program when indeed they were receiving a memory program. Now, they did pre and post tests. The pre-test measured memory, and the post-test measured memory and or self-esteem. But they asked the group at the end of the 30 days, how did it do? I mean, do you think it improved your memory? And pretty unanimously, the group reported, yeah, I think it did help my memory, or yeah, I think it helped my esteem. However, the data didn't verify that. The data showed no change. Now, this was a study. You have to understand that this study was commercial tapes. These tapes are created all differently. Indeed, one study of the five tapes showed they didn't have any subliminal content on them that was recoverable at all. So, you know, if there's no signal strength, there is no subliminal information that's going to be processed. But when you looked at these companies, you saw they also used all kinds of different messages. I mean, you would think that if you're going to run a scientific study, you're going to study a single modality, a single something or other. You're not going to mix it all up together. Anyway, the study is totally invalid. However, it was brought out by CBS, and then it appeared in magazines around the world as the foremost study on subliminal information processing, and it showed that subliminal was all a hoax. It was just about the expectation factor. Well, the long and the short of this case came down to this. According to the private investigator, a former Scotland Yard detective hired by CBS to find their original 24-track master, it could not be found. But also according to him, in open court, under oath, he admitted that CBS wouldn't allow him access to their vaults. CBS argued that where Judas Priest admitted that they had used subliminal messages on albums before, they didn't do it on this one, and the do it command was simply a coincidence of sound. The judge ruled, therefore, that there was insufficient evidence to indicate that it was more than coincidence of sound, and the case was dismissed. There's the story of the Judas Priest case. It still sticks in my craw when I think about that, because for all intent and purposes, this was a case won by a lot of money and not by the truth.
Thank you, Eldon, for that story. And it is, you do talk about it in your book. You touch on the Judas Priest trial in the Choices and Illusions book. And I have a lot of questions about your Inner Talk subliminals. The book includes a free Inner Talk CD. And I'm just wondering, you had mentioned about the recoverability of, you know, on these tapes in that one study that CBS referred to. And so as I'm listening to this CD, for myself, I actually am not noticing any results or any difference. And I'm wondering how loud it has to be, because I notice if I have it up loud enough, I can hear sort of a murmur. I can't quite decipher what they're saying, but I can hear something. Does it have to be loud enough for your ears to actually pick that up?
Well, the answer is you have to play the information at a volume sufficient for you to hear it. Yes, I mean, there's no magic about that. It's not like it's going to come through the ether and some collective unconscious deposited into your scalp some way. It's science, and you're going to have to process it, so the signal strength needs to be sufficiently strong to trigger a neuron. Now, that said, the nature of the technology you're listening to is not subliminal in the sense that it's buried. The information is really there, and if you pan your speakers to the entire left or the entire right, you begin to hear more clearly what you describe as mumbling. It's really, this is people talking. This is a male, a female, and a child, and they're repeating affirmations such as, you know, I love life, life is wonderful, I'm good, I'm worthy, I deserve, or, you know, you can look at, you can read the affirmations, indeed, they're printed in the book. The nature of the research shows this, and multiple double-blind studies have been carried out on InnerTalk by leading institutions such as Stanford, by governments for that matter, like Germany and Mexico, and repeatedly the technology has been demonstrated effective at changing the way you talk to yourself. So whether it was, you know, test anxiety, or it was ADHD, or it was weight loss, or for that matter, even health issues like cancer remission, we have studies that show the efficacy of changing your expectation. Now, that's what you have to understand. It's not doing anything other than changing the way you talk to yourself. So let me give you a case in point so this makes sense. I was in Mexico once lecturing, and I just completed a presentation, and it was open for Q&A, and a young woman in the back raised her hand, and her question was somewhat analogous to what you just presented. She said, yeah, I got the creative writing program. I've been listening to the creative writing program according to instructions for almost 30 days now. And the instructions and the dosage relevancy is use it 1 hour a day, every day for 30 days. That's how all the studies were run, okay? And at this point, I mean, we've got 50, 60 different studies that have been run on different programs, all verifying what I'm saying. But so she said, I've listened to this almost to 30 days, And I don't see any difference. And so I asked her, you know, take out the affirmations and read them aloud to everyone. And as she did, she started to read these statements. You know, I enjoy writing, I like writing, blah, 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 blah. And I said to her, now, while you're reading, tell me something about yourself. What is it that you do? And she says, oh, I'm a journalist. Oh, so do you write every day? Yeah, I've won a couple of prizes. I have three novels that are best-selling novels. And she went on to describe her writing career as a very successful writer. So what she was reading on these affirmations, every single one of them was a part of her current thinking process. She was already there. This program was not designed to go to already successful writer. This is a program designed to ignite creative writing, to start that process, to give you that confidence, to help you get into being a writer, not a program designed to somehow make Ernest Hemingway a better writer. Do you understand what I just said? Mm-hmm. So if you take out the affirmations yourself, Marie, you look at those affirmations and you go through them and you read them. If every one of them you already believe, they're already a part and parcel of who you are, then this program, Personal Power, you've already accomplished its objective. If, on the other hand, as you read them all, you read them thoughtfully, you read them slowly, I'll just tell you where a lot of people stick. They come to the forgiveness set. I forgive myself. I forgive all others. I don't know that I forgive all others. What do you mean I forgive all others? I remember someone said, no, I have not let that go. And you see, if you do this, if you read it slowly and carefully, you begin to understand where the resistance is. Because we have a conscious sentry, and that conscious sentry will talk back to us. The best example of that is, I've used this around the globe in lectures. You can ask everybody attending a lecture who wants to make $1 million this year, and all hands will come up. So you say, okay, in order to make $1 million, you know that you must truly believe you can make $1 million. I mean, that's where you begin. As the Buddha said, we're shaped by our thoughts. We become what we think. Everything begins in the mind, so you must believe that you're going to make $1 million. So what I want you to do is say silently to yourself and say it meaningfully, this year I'm going to make $1 million. Because I said make $1 million, you know, you're not going to win the lottery. And think about it, because you're going to have to go at risk. You may have to sell your home, or you may have to borrow against it. You may have to quit your job. You may have to find some partner to assist you. But you're going to have to go at risk. You're going to have to change what you're doing in order to be successful. So say that. Say it silently, say it meaningfully. It only takes a couple of seconds, and you start seeing people shake their heads and laugh to themselves, because what happens is you're likely to get that inner sentry coming back, talking to you, your own stream of consciousness saying to you things like, yeah, sure, what are you going to do, rob a bank? I've heard this stuff before, et cetera, et cetera. So what you do when you read these affirmations is you read them slowly, you read them thoughtfully, you say them with as much meaning as though you were saying them to somebody. Imagine your child and you're talking to them in their twilight stages or falling asleep, and you're just saying it to them with all the love and compassion that you can possibly say it. Say it that way to yourself, and you'll detect, you'll feel resistance if there is any. And if there isn't, well, you're already there. I mean, I can't describe it any better than that.
All right, thanks, Eldon. And so I'm curious, you also say that you can listen while you're watching TV. You can have it on in the background. So how does that work?
Well, and absolutely, we're continually processing information. We process information even when we're not aware of it. Some of my work for years was in forensic hypnosis, and there are, you know, many applications. I'll give you a quick one. I was called into Sandy City one evening because of an armed robbery, and the subject that was the victim to the armed robbery could basically tell us one thing: it was a very big gun. Now, what had happened is he worked in an all-night or in a theater, and at lockup time, he'd taken his deposit to an all-night deposit at the bank. And as he pulled up to the bank, the teller area where you would deposit this, a car pulled in behind him. The perpetrator, one of the perpetrators, jumped out of the car, ran up, stuck a gun in his face, and said, "Give me the money." So that's the story that we had. However, under hypnosis, his mind was able to tell us everything. So he had been a Hertz car rental manager before going to work for Consolidated Theaters. So here he was, able to describe for us the automobile that had pulled in behind him because he saw it in the rearview mirror. He had no conscious recognition that he'd seen it in the rearview mirror, but he not only saw it, but he saw when the car door opened, swung open, the dome light came on. So he saw the driver of the automobile. He was able to describe the weapon, the grease on the knuckles, the individual that approached him. The detail was so clear that before daylight, we had a recovery and the perpetrators arrested. So the mind is always processing information, and it processes this information without our conscious awareness. When we sit down in front of television, two things are going to happen. The first one is, research shows us you're not going to be able to maintain normal alpha, or I should say normal beta consciousness. What's going to happen? Instead of your brainwave activity operating at the 15 to 30 cycles per second or so, your brainwave activity is going to slow down. It's going to come down into that 8 to 14 cycles per second. And that's a stage that, again, I've testified in a court of law regarding what hypnosis is. Hypnosis is objectified as a brainwave state. We can use multicranial EEG, watch the brain wave activity slow down when you enter these states, altered states, hypnosis, meditation, and they'll slow into typically what we call alpha, or a little bit slower into theta, but they'll come down into this 8 cycles per second area. A situation, a condition that I describe in a court of law, that is described again in a court of law, as a state of hyper-suggestibility. Now, the research shows us when you sit down in front of the television set, if I motivate you, if I say, you know, listen, Marie, I'm going to give you $10 if you'll just maintain ordinary consciousness in front of a TV set for 5 minutes, while we monitor your brainwave activity, the odds are very, very high you will be unable to do so. The flicker rate in the television entrains the brain, so we slow into this alpha state. Everybody should know that. I mean, there's research today that, and even recommendations to how much television you should put your children in front of. A lot of people babysit their children by just simply sitting them in front of television, and some of what they get out of that can include onset of ADHD. So what we should be aware of with the TV is we're going to go into this altered state. That's the first condition. The second condition is in a hyper-suggestible state, that's the altered state, we're going to take in all the information, whether it's placement ads like, oh, that was a Mac computer that fellow just opened up. Oh, and he's driving. What is that? That's a new Cadillac Escalade they're driving. Whether it's the placement ads, it's the subliminal content, or it's here comes the gombu. It's coming to town, and you're going to get it. But if you go down to your pharmacy and buy XYZ drug, why, you will be so pampered by your loved ones and feel so much better. The selling of sickness. To me, that's a little bit, it's analogically comparable to, look, I go to my hypnotist hypnotized me, suggests to me I'm going to get sick, tells me if I come back and give him $150 when I do get sick, well, then he's going to cure me. He'll hypnotize me again. So, that's what happens. Well, look, in that state, the mind is very receptive. So if you're going to be watching television, playing a Intertalk program in the background, receiving these affirmations beneficially designed to engineer confidence and positivity and optimal feelings of well-being, well, they're just kind of an antidote to maybe some of the negative that you might get out of it. Indeed, another good time to use it is when you're sleeping. And the reason for that isn't because in deep sleep you're going to process it, because you won't. But for the average adult, these REM cycles, rapid eye movement cycles, the twilight stages, falling asleep and waking up, the so-called hypnopompic and hypnagogic stages of sleep, they amount to 3.5 hours every evening for the average adult. And that's 3.5 hours of optimal time to put this information into your mind.
So, Eldon, if I'm in this state when I'm sleeping or watching, or part of the time when I'm sleeping or when I'm watching television, couldn't I just record a voice that I could hear saying you're great or whatever, all the affirmations? I mean, what's the difference between me playing audible affirmations and playing an InnerTalk subliminal CD?
That's an excellent question, Marie. And the bottom line comes down to this. When you create yourself an affirmation board, a vision board, or you write affirmations all over the house, or you say them to yourself, it's again akin to saying, this year I'm going to make $1 million. So you start saying, I am good, I like myself, life is wonderful, and your stream of consciousness may well be mitigating the power of that by saying, yeah, sure, good at what? Do you remember when? How about? The fact of the matter is we have some 50,000 thoughts every single day, and they are circular. They repeat one another. They go over and over again. Research shows us today that using functional magnetic resonance imaging, a technician watching you make a decision, a technician watching your brain during the process of you making a decision, will know what you're going to do 6 to 10 seconds before you know. Let me repeat that, because that should cause everybody pause for alarm. 6 seconds before you know what you're going to do, what choice you will make, an MRI technician will write down, record accurately what it is you're going to do. 6 seconds before you know. Now, years ago, back in the 50s, Benjamin Libet, using multicranial EEG, found this cortical evoked potential, the so-called P300 wave, occurring in areas of the subconscious prior to any conscious activity. And that triggered an onslaught at all the university campuses, at least in America, regarding this conversation having to do with free will. Is there any such thing as free will if the subconscious is making your decisions for you? That's a valid question. Are we just going through life making up, explanations for why we do things? I mean, we know the research also shows that the human condition will confabulate, the conscious mind will confabulate stories for why we do what we do. The unconscious will make decisions. The conscious mind will confabulate the reason. Now, understand, a confabulation isn't a lie to the person that's telling you that because they truly believe it. Their conscious mind has said, yeah, I did that because of this. I mean, here, let me give you an example of one such study. In split-brain studies, well, I'll just stay with this one because we don't need to go to split-brain. We can take four automobiles, new automobiles, and show them to a group of young men, and on one of them drape a pretty lady in a bikini. Ask them to judge the fastest automobile, and they will invariably choose the car with a woman in the bikini. Bring them back a week later. Put the cars in slightly different positions, but put the woman with the bikini on a different car, and they will invariably again choose the car with a woman with a bikini. Now, show them what they just did. Explain to them that you're choosing the woman in the bikini, not the car. And they will make up reasons for why that's not true. Indeed, they chose the car. And, oh, you know, I didn't notice it had the baffles. And, you know, it also is a little more, you know. And the stories that they'll come up with, they truly believe, but they are confabulations. So here we have the question, what is free will if the unconscious mind is making all of our choices and we're just consciously confabulating why we did what we did? Well, you know, the bottom line then comes down to this. The brain is a believing machine. It likes to find connections. It likes to see things where things don't exist. And it has this confirmation bias. Your show's about synchronicity, so let me try something on you. Abraham Lincoln and John F. Kennedy were both presidents of the United States, elected 100 years apart. Both were shot and killed by assassins who were known by three names with 15 letters, John Wilkes Booth and Lee Harvey Oswald. And neither killer would make it to trial. Kennedy had a secretary named Lincoln. They were both killed on a Friday while sitting next to their wives. Lincoln in the Ford Theater, Kennedy in a Lincoln made by Ford. Both men were succeeded by a man named Johnson, Andrew for Lincoln and Lyndon for Kennedy. Andrew was born in 1808, Lyndon in 1908. What are the odds of that being a coincidence? You don't have to answer that. It's a rhetorical question because 99 out of 100 folk are going to say, wow, there must be some connection here. And the fact of the matter is, that is a fallacy in thinking. We call it the Texas sharpshooter fallacy. It kind of goes like this. If you take this sharpshooter, this so-called Texas cowboy, and you have him shoot his gun, shoot the side of a barn full of bullets, and then you look at that barn and you go over there and you draw a paintbrush circle around a cluster of bullets, bullet holes. That cluster of bullet holes makes it look like this shooter was a real sharpshooter. But what you've done is you've selected just part of all the holes that are on this wall. You haven't considered all the other disconnections, all those other aspects between Kennedy and Lincoln that would separate them. Well, the way our minds work, we have these confirmation biases, these fallacies of the way we think, these shortcuts, etc. And we end up with what today is called the click whir, system one and system two. System one thinking is, I'm not taking time to consciously evaluate what I'm doing. It's just all click whir. System two is where I stop and I think. What is it I'm doing? Why is it I'm doing this? What are the alternatives? What's the rationale behind it? And when you just look at it that simply, you see that we do very little system two thinking. So here I am. I'm taking an affirmation, and I'm saying to myself, I am good. And my conscious sentry may well be saying, yeah, sure. Who believes that? That trying to get it from the outside in differs from the inner talk approach, where what we're doing is we're priming the way you talk to yourself so that it comes from the inside out. So in other words, the conscious sentry can't defend against these statements. All these positive statements are going directly, if you will, to the unconscious. They are priming. Now, I'm going to add one more thing, if I may, Marie, here.
Sure.
I am absolutely convinced that we have free will, but only in this sense. We have free will to the extent that we decide to choose what we put into that biocomputer of an unconscious. I mean, think of it as a calculator. If everything we put into it is negative, it's no don't, you're not old enough, you're too stupid, you'll never amount to anything, you're skinny, you're fat. You know, we watch all the commercials on television. They have one common message. You're deficient. If you weren't, you wouldn't need the makeup. You wouldn't need the hair dye. You wouldn't need the clothing. You wouldn't need you wouldn't need what they're selling. So they have to tell you you're deficient in some way. So we're bombarded with all this negativity, and that's in the repository. That repository that holds everything. That unconscious mind. And when we ask it to make a calculation, what do we think we're going to get? The guy cuts us off in 5 o'clock traffic. We're going to say, namaste. Namaste. Or we're going to wag our middle finger and honk our horn because we had to slam our brakes in order to avoid hitting him. Which one's coming out of us? Well, we are in charge of what we put into that unconscious. And if we choose to program it with the information we want to come out, then, you know, it's going to work in our favor. And if we don't, well, it's likely to be our worst enemy.
All right. Well, thank you, Eldon. I have lots more questions, but it's time for a break. So we'll be back with more synchronicity in just a moment. This is CITR in Vancouver. And right now we are speaking with Eldon Taylor. He is an expert in subliminal messaging, and he's also author of, well, in addition to many other books, we're talking about his book today, Choices and Illusions. How did I get to where I am, and how do I get to where I want to be? So we'll be back with more synchronicity in a moment.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts on Commercial Drive and in other areas at
Bone Rattle Music, High Life Records, People's Co-op Bookstore, Audiopile Records, Bad Bird Media, BAM Merch Canada, and the Vancouver Music Gallery.
Wow, it sure does pay to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or go online to www.citr.ca.
Keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me. For sure, that's what friends are for.
The 4th Annual Versus Festival of Words explores writers of all walks of life, including poets, storytellers, comedians, and singer-songwriters. With 34 all-ages events, there is something for everyone, including the Canadian Individual Poetry Slam. Over 40 slam poets from across the country will battle it out to represent English Canada at the World Cup of Poetry in Paris. The festival comes to Vancouver April 5th to 12th, and more information can be found at versusfestival.ca.
Well, I was walking down the street one afternoon, headed for the jam.
Hempology 101 is a student-run organization here to educate the public about the benefits of hemp and cannabis. Fast fact! Hemp is a renewable, sustainable source of food and fiber. Fast fact! Your body contains anandamide, which is part of the same family of substances as THC. To learn more, look us up on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/Hempology101UBC. Or come to one of our great events. And don't forget, legalization through education.
Last year, over 650 BC teens aged out of foster care without a permanent family.
Adoption is not just for babies. Teens need families too. Only 24 teens in BC were adopted last year.
November is Adoption Awareness Month. To find out more about adopting a teen, contact the Adoptive Families Association of BC. Call 1-877-ADOPT-07 or visit us at bcadopt.com.
Hi, welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are speaking with Eldon Taylor. He's the author of Choices and Illusions and the founder of Inner Talk, which is subliminal messaging. And if you look on the website, there's like a plethora of things that we can talk to ourselves inwardly through Inner Talk. Welcome back to the show, Eldon.
Well, thank you very much. It's indeed my pleasure.
So I am curious, again, about the, like, how loud it has to be, because I find that the Inner Talk CD that comes with the book is music. Right. And so I can only have it on so loud. I think I actually downloaded, you have the, I believe, the Forgiveness one available for free download.
Yeah, we have several that are available. But yeah, Forgiving and Letting Go is available as a free program in both the ocean format as well as the music format.
And so for me, I found that the ocean format, like, I'm just wondering as far as how loud it needs to be, do you need to be able to hear some of what, like, just hear that there's a person saying something in order for it to be effective?
Let me explain a little bit how the technology is done, and that'll answer your question. When you listen to the music, there's water sounds. Do you hear the water sounds when you listen to the music?
Yes.
Okay. If you can hear the water sounds, you're good to go. And that's because the affirmations are actually on top of the water. What you're listening to is an audio illusion. You know, typically people think about subliminal, and where visual is concerned, maybe it's a frame every 14 frames, so it goes by so quickly we don't see it. A tachyscope projection, which presents something quickly, very rapidly in milliseconds, often used in university research. Or maybe it's a candlewatt difference. I've done this where I've projected an image, like with a keynote or a PowerPoint presentation, over another image. And the image that I'm projecting is a little bit brighter. It's kind of like trying to shine a flashlight in a bright room on a white wall and you don't see anything. But if you dim the light, you suddenly begin to see it. Well, with just a light differential like that, you can present information. Usually when I'm lecturing, I present like five numbers, and I ask people to choose one of those five numbers without ever letting them know that I've been priming them for the period of 1 hour during a lecture with the number to choose. So they, underneath my projection has been this message, choose number, you know, 118 or whatever the number was that I've selected for that day. And without, you know, exception, there is always a far beyond chance indication that indeed they were processing that information based on their choice.
So, Eldon, I need to clarify on that. So when you're saying you pre-select a number, are there subliminal messages playing in the background, or are you throwing in the number 118
no,
into your lecture?
No, this is just a visual I'm explaining here.
Oh, okay.
This is just a visual presentation. So there's nothing that's going in the background in this scenario. This is just how it would be done visually. Now, when you go to audio, people tend to think about, well, we just bury it. We just hide the message. Indeed, I was asked once by a company to become involved in assisting in their defense when a AG's office targeted them with a basically put up or shut up, prove that, you know, your product does indeed do this. And I had just finished successfully assisting a Canadian psychologist who was charged with an ethics violation for supporting subliminal communication by bringing all the evidence that demonstrated its efficacy to bear. So I asked this company, well, send me your engineer or have your engineer contact me and let me know how he creates the program, because that's the very first thing that you want to know. Again, back to this study I told you about with the five tapes, that they all do it differently. If they're burying messages and you can't recover them, Well, that's really not the same thing. That's there's no signal strength there. When the engineer sent me his affidavit, it said he mixed at minus 50 dB beneath the primary carrier. So in your instance, let's take what you're talking about, that subliminal program, the intertalk. The music you hear, that engineer would have mixed beneath that music 50 dB his subliminal content. Now, the problem with that is there are very few players, stereo systems, that have a theoretical limit that would allow for them to get that minus 50 dB out if you had the volume at maximum. So for all intent and purposes, that's not recoverable information. That may as well be a whisper said in New York right now. It's not going to affect you, and it's not going to affect me. Okay? But what you're listening to, the information isn't buried. It's masked in a process known as dichotic masking. So you have one set of information coming on one channel and another set of information coming on the other channel. These two channels, the information channel discriminated, are placed on top of the water sounds. Now, part of the reason you don't comprehend, you don't understand that mumbling that's going on in the background is analogous to tossing you two balls at the same time that are maybe 3 feet apart. If you try to look them both into your hand simultaneously, you will drop one or the other. If you just rely on your instincts, it's possible for you to catch those two balls. Well, when you try to pay attention, you lose the ability to comprehend typically these messages, other than to catch maybe a word here and there, because on one channel, your affirmations are coming in reverse, while on the other channel, they're coming in forward. So you have a forward spoken message that says, as a case in point, I like myself. And that same message coming on the other channel, reversed. It's still, I like myself, but it's said backwards. Now, part of our patent and part of my research has been about how we holographically process information. Way back when Carl Pregrim and David Bohm were working on memory, and I'm dating myself, but when I went to college, I was taught memory was stored in engrams and egrams, and that's just all nonsense. Research shows it. Maze-bright rats, their brains have been systematically, parts of them removed in an attempt to locate where memory is stored, and even when every single aspect that could possibly store memory has been eliminated, the rat is still maze-bright. So I think this idea of Pregrim and Bohm's has gained a lot of traction of late, which essentially argues that we store information redundantly holographically. Now, for people that don't understand what a holograph is, if you create a holographic plate, what you're basically doing is splitting light when it hits a mirror and then bringing it back together in a point. It's mathematically, it works this way. If I drop a stone in the water, concentric circles will begin to extend from that point of impact. If I drop another one in the water a couple of feet away, well, concentric circles from it will begin to overlap with the first. And at that point of overlap, that's when we get the holograph. What happens with a holograph is I can take this holographic plate, this picture, and I can cut it into 1,000 pieces. I can shine light through any one of those pieces, and I will have a representation of the total, of the whole. So, looking at memory as being stored that way, years ago, I theorized that when children commonly reverse things like S's and fives and so forth, when you look at it, it's a mirror image of the correct language. I theorized that perhaps we were processing language initially in our right brain, which is not the ruling center for language, in reverse. Well, if that were the case, there would be some stage where maybe you could verify that that was true. Well, while I was doing my own work, unbeknownst to me, it was a man in Australia by the name of David Oates who was looking at reverse speech and discovered through early recordings with children who it's not the goo-goo-ga-ga stage. They look at you very earnestly. They're saying something. You know they're trying to say something, but it makes no sense to you. When you take that information, you record it, you play it backwards, you get meaningful speech. Daddy home, mommy play. So what we did is, theorizing this way, that the mind, and this is a paper I presented, I guess, over 20 years ago now in Israel, the mind mirrors information. We call it the MIP, mirror imaging paradigm. It mirrors the information, and as our brains develop, we shift from right brain dominance to left brain dominance, and in that shifting, we develop the rules of language, and there we begin to use language as we come to understand semantic rules in a very formal way, and it becomes very understandable. But nevertheless, we still have the capacity to process it in the right hemisphere. Now, using it in interrogation, we know this. You can slow down, play backwards and slow down statements made during or by a subject and find new information. Sometimes it's collateral. What were you doing during this between 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock? Well, I was on my way home. I stopped at the grocery store, and then I went home. In reverse, we might get loaf of bread and milk. It could be collateral information. It can also be the kind of information. The first
Eldon,
I
need to stop you for a second to get some clarification. So when you're saying a person might say the words, I was on my way home, I went to the store, and then I went home. If you recorded that and played it in reverse, you might hear the words loaf of bread and milk. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. That's exactly correct.
Hmm.
And you know, the first time I encountered something of this nature, and by the way, you can go to reversespeech.com and listen to many examples, but the first time I encountered it, I was, reviewing a lie detection examination. The recording was on an Ooh Hair recorder, and I was backing up the tape by hand, and this was a lie detection test, and the perpetrator was pretty good evidence, but he passed the test. The individual, right when we asked this person, did you take the missing money, he said no, but when I backed it up by hand, I heard liar over and over again. And it turned out that, well, indeed, he had taken the money. We were able to verify that and whatnot. But so if you understand this process, then what we do is we deliver simultaneously forward speech and reverse speech. Because they're hemispherically tasked, it's analogous to the Stroop color test. If I show you a lot of words, and I color these words, let's say I show you the word blue, but I color it orange, and I show you the word green, and I color it yellow, and I show you the word red, but instead of it being red, it's black. And I ask you to read, this is the Stroop test, I ask you to read as rapidly as you can these words. Left brain dominant people will be unable to read the color. They'll switch to reading the rule of language. So if I say to you, let's assume again that what we have in a row is the word is green, but the color is red. Instead of saying red, the color, you will invariably say green, the meaning of the word. The faster you're asked to do that, the more confounded you become with the two hemispheres competing according to their natural dominance. What happens is this leads to an audio illusion when we put the two programs together, which is why I say if you pan all the way to the left or all the way to the right, where you'll hear just either reverse speech and or forward speech, the speech becomes much clearer.
Thank you, Eldon.
Does that answer your question, Marie?
I believe so, yeah. It's a lot of information.
If I can hear that water sound, I'm good to go.
Great. Thank you. So we just have a few minutes left in the show. Parts Unknown is coming up in just a few minutes. So, Eldon, I'm just wondering, what is the most important thing that you want listeners to take away today?
Well, I think the most important thing comes down to how important it is that you believe in yourself. John Milton said, the mind is its own place and in itself can make a heaven of hell or a hell of heaven. I am absolutely convinced that every human being has a vast reservoir of potential that that they're entitled to express, and they're due so much more in life than most of us ever appreciate, most of us ever enjoy. But the only way we can really do that is to become mindful of our thoughts, become mindful of where these thoughts come from. Don't judge them. But just look at them as they come in, and so that we can become aware of what we really believe at our deepest levels of our being, instead of running on this click-whir model. Take the time to meditate and review these thoughts that, as soon as you tell the mind to be quiet, it will rush thoughts at you like there's no tomorrow. Listen to how you talk to yourself. And begin to take charge of what it is that's in your mind. Use whatever technologies that are available to you as antidotes to cancel the negative messaging and the beliefs that cause, that limit us from expressing our highest, best potential. That is the bottom line message to Choices and Illusions. I try to provide many, many ways, including short meditations that can be done, so that somebody doesn't ever have to spend a dime of it. But the bottom line is, I really believe in the human potential, and I think it goes largely unexpressed.
Thank you, Eldon. And if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to contact you?
Visit my website, eldontaylor.com. That's eldontaylor.com. And you can email me. I do answer my own emails most of the time. Email me at eldon@eldontaylor.com. And Marie, I really enjoyed this opportunity to share with you. Thank you very much for inviting me on your show.
Thank you so much for the work you do. And thanks for your time, Eldon.
My pleasure.
Take care. Have a wonderful day.
You too, for sure.
Bye-bye. So again, that was Eldon Taylor. He is the author of Choices and Illusions. How did I get where I am and how do I get where I want to be? And he is the founder of Inner Talk. So you can Google Inner Talk and you can also contact him at eldontaylor.com. So coming up in just a moment is Parts Unknown. And thank you to Philip for sitting in. And do you think you're going to maybe sign up for a show?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me here. I feel very excited to just be surrounded by... I feel like I'm at the core of the university right now, just like being at the radio station, because I used to listen to CITR before I came to UBC. And
awesome. Yeah. Cool. Okay, well, thank you so much for sitting in. All right, well, I've got to get out of here so Chris Arific can start up his show. So thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful day. I love you so much. Be well. Namaste.
Namaste.
You want to say it? Namaste.
Namaste.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Monday.
From 1 to 3.